I want to show you try to understand along with you how to live in the best of both worlds based on the psalm reading and based on this morning's gospel. The cross is many things. One thing that it is a symbol of how to live in the best of both worlds. And the one key component that we can't forget whenever we talk about this is that Jesus is right there at the center of the cross. Just as Jesus died on that cross, just as Jesus, through his death and resurrection, transformed the cross from an instrument of death into something else much more mysterious and powerful, so too in this image of living well does the cross represent how we can do it, but always with Jesus right there at the center. So let's start with the psalm, and this takes us to the vertical of the cross. That beautiful Psalm number 8, that praise to God about all of creation. And you can think of creation as going up and down this vertical shaft of the cross. Start down at the bottom, you know, we'd probably all agree in terms of consciousness, thought, feeling, rocks are down there, soil, move up a little bit, trees, flowers, keep moving up, and you'll have fish, those things that swim in the sea, as the psalm says, animals of various types, as we keep moving up the cross, and where you want to put them in the hierarchy might depend on, your own feelings and your own understanding of animals. I'm not even going to get into the debate of whether cats are higher than dogs or dogs are higher than cats. But I'll tell you one thing for sure. As many of you know, we raised pigs out on our farm for about 8 to 10 years, and I will go to my grave with the certainty that pigs are smarter than both. So I'm putting them up towards this end. And then we keep going up with beings with sentience, with consciousness, with a spiritual understanding. And then human beings are right there at the center with Jesus, right where the two meet, the vertical and the horizontal. And we'll get to the horizontal in a minute. That's got its own special meaning, the second world. But in this first world of our relationship with creation, we're right there. We're right there. And Jesus is at the center of that. Remember, in the Gospels, Jesus tamed the seas. Jesus transformed nature when he multiplied the fish and the loaves in order to feed the people. Jesus had this remarkable, incredible God-given power over creation that he used to perform his miracles and to help people. And as we keep going higher up the hierarchy, up the great chain of being, up the vertical of the cross, we get to the angels, and of course we get to God at the very top. The angels, God's messengers, coming down and delivering messages to human beings. Two famous examples from the gospel, of course, when God visited Mary, the mother of Jesus, at his birth, and then when God visited Mary Magdalene at Jesus' tomb after his resurrection. But the psalm speaks of this. The psalm speaks of the place of human beings as just a little bit lower than the angels. And so here's God the creator and all of the created beings below, the angels here, and then human beings just a little bit below them in the position of wonderful glory and honor. And the way that we can live well in the created world is to understand our place as part of it, again, to understand Jesus' centrality to it, and to live in it, giving praise and thanks to God, and to live in the creation that God loves with the love that God gave us to show to creation, to care for it, to appreciate it, to do those things in our daily lives, and to do those things as citizens of the world, so that creation can be cared for. This is such an easy sermon to give this time of year because there are so many examples. All I got to do is walk outside and look in any direction, up, down, north, south, east, west, and you'll see the beauty that we have here. You'll see the flowers. You'll see the creatures you'll see the power of creation that God put into our world. So when you go out there and when you live in the world, remember that we are part of it. And remember that one way of living well, half of the story, is to respect and to love and to appreciate, to give thanks to God. Remember those words of Psalm number 8, glory be to God, when you go out and see the sky or see the sea. We've spent some time lately visiting state parks. We started last year, bought an Empire Pass, and spent just about every weekend traveling somewhere in New York State. But over the past week, we've made a day trip just about every day to visit a state park somewhere. And it is just amazing, the treasures from Watkins Glen to Letchworth to the shores of Lake Ontario to the St. Lawrence River, even in our own backyard up at the north end of Otsego Lake and Glimmerglass State Park. All places, just like the places where we live, that can connect us with nature. And that can help us to live well in the world of nature and the world of creation that we are a central part of. Now, the horizontal, that's humanity. Again, with Jesus right at the center, the great mediator, the great intermediary between God and humanity. And the love that God gave to humans upon creation was to put them in the central place along the horizontal bar, the great mass of humanity and all of our differences and all of our distinctiveness spread across this world that we live in. And to live well in the second world is to live well with each other. As the expert says correctly to Jesus, to love God, and by extension God's creation, and to love our neighbors. Well, here are our neighbors along the horizontal. So to live well, to live in both worlds, to experience the best of both worlds, is to love God in creation on the vertical and to love your neighbor, to love humanity on the horizontal. But as usual, Jesus makes things a little bit more complicated, a little bit more nuanced, a little bit more insightful in his story of the Good Samaritan. When the man asks, who is our neighbor? Jesus gives him an answer that is actually quite shocking. Most of the time, when we think about it, we think, okay, Good Samaritan, be a Good Samaritan. Go out and do things for your neighbor. Go out and do things for people wherever they may be on this horizontal. Whether we are here and they are as far apart, far as much different from us as they can possibly be, go out and do good for them. All right, great. You know, that's living a Christian life. That's being a Good Samaritan. Good thing. Let's do it. This day and age, it's not that difficult, actually, especially in organized religion, because we have things like UMCOR. So when something happens to people who are very different than us, living in a different part of the world, the call goes out and we contribute. Contribute actual money, you can make flood buckets, you can make shoe boxes, you can go to places and actually help. There are a dozen ways that you can help people and to be a Good Samaritan. But this isn't quite what Jesus is talking about, because he flips the perspective. He flips the point of view. When he tells the story, it's not us who are being the Good Samaritans. We are the ones who are being Good Samaritans too. And that makes it very, very different and extremely powerful. Step back a little bit. The Samaritans were from the northern kingdom of Israel, not to be confused with the southern kingdom of Judah. They split after Solomon left the throne and of the king of the combined kingdoms, Solomon's descendants. And at the time of Jesus, they were two separate kingdoms, and they were very antagonistic. Indeed, they were mortal enemies, hated each other. The Samaritans, the kingdom of Israel in the north, centered in the capital city of Samaria, had started to worship other gods brought to them by the people and leaders of Phoenicia on the coast of the Mediterranean. And in Judah, centered in Jerusalem, they worshiped still Yahweh at the temple and were pretty hardcore, pretty angry at the Samaritans for what they said was the abandonment of Yahweh. And so to the Judeans, the Samaritans were the enemies. And Jesus was talking to a Judean. He was in Galilee, you know, not too far from Jerusalem. And of course, Jesus would go to the capital city where he would end his life. But he was talking to someone from that perspective. So the man on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho was the one who got beat up and robbed and left for dead. And a southern kingdom, a Judean from Jerusalem priest, a religious authority walks by, doesn't help. A Levite, a political authority, walks by, doesn't help. But then comes this Samaritan. Then comes this enemy. Then comes this person who, you know, did you notice at the very end? I'll read the last bit of dialogue. Which of these two do you think was the neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. The expert in the law couldn't even say his name. Couldn't even say Samaritan, the one who had mercy on him. And you can imagine his tone, oh, the one who had mercy on him. He couldn't even say the Samaritan. They were such bitter enemies, and the hatred ran so deep. So what Jesus seems to be saying here, to go back to the image, is that when on this horizontal of all the equality of all humans under God and the love that God gives all human beings along this complete span with, again, himself, Jesus, right in the center, that we have an obligation to show the love of God to each other, love God and love your neighbor, not just to show it, but also to accept it. And that's where things can get tricky. Because we have a tendency to say, anyway, even if it's somebody that we help and love and we know who loves us, we have a tendency to say, no, I'm fine, I don't need the help. I don't need the help. I can get along myself, I'm fine. Especially with our tradition of individualism in this country. But what Jesus is saying is not only accept the help from someone, but accept help from your enemies. He takes that whole thing about love the enemies that he talked about elsewhere over and over and over again and turns it on its head. Not only love your enemies, but accept love from your enemy. So think about it. Think about who it would be today in terms of being good Samaritan too, being helped. Who's the last person that you would want to help? You know, in the big picture, in terms of, you know, modern day equivalent of the relationship between the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom, Jerusalem and Samaria, a Russian general who, you know, supports and is was all gung-ho about invading the Ukraine. A few years ago, maybe a Taliban warrior or an Iraqi soldier fighting against America. Think about who that might be, the enemy, the last person that you would want to help you. Maybe for some of you it would be a red hat wearing. No, I'm not even going to go. Keep politics out of church. But that's what Jesus is getting at. It's like coded language, you know, when he talks, it's a good Samaritan for a reason, because it's the absolute last person. It's, we are here, the good Samaritan is as far away from us as we can get, or vice versa, we're here and the good Samaritan is over there. And it's to show the love of God, we not only help, but we allow ourselves to be helped. It's extraordinary. So to live in the best of both worlds, keep this image of the cross in your mind, the vertical being the hierarchy of creation, all the things that God created and all the things that God put God's love into. And think of the horizontal as humanity and all of our differences and all the ways that we're the same, but especially in the case of this morning's gospel, and all the ways that divide and separate us. Even then, we not only help and love others, but we should accept the help and love of others. In this way, we can live in the best of both worlds.